All right, Alexander, let's talk about what's going on in Europe with the corona. And let's focus in on Italy. I know you have some information on what's going on in the UK. And the situation in Italy is absolutely heartbreaking. And I'm going to read you a headline from Fox News. Russian army sending hard-hit Italy corona aid after Putin phone call. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered his nation's army to deliver medical aid to Italy, the new epicenter of corona pandemic. After offering help during a Saturday phone call with Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte. And let's see, Russia will send 100 military members who specialize in virology and epidemics. Reuters reported, citing the Interfax news agency, Russia was loading 9 colossal 276 cargo planes with 8 mobile medical teams, medical equipment, and aerosol disinfection trucks to send to Italy's hardest hit regions. Alexander, Italy suffered a catastrophic death toll the other day and today. And the other day, it almost hit 800. They have nearly 4,000 deaths, I believe, to be more accurate, 4,825 at the time of this recording, the highest in the world.
I
launch into an absolute tirade with the EU and Merkel and the incompetence of the kleptocrats and the thieves and the imbeciles and the morons in Brussels. Get to this story first, Alexander.
Right. Well, I mean, the first thing to say is that what this story has done is that it's exposed who has functioning systems, health systems, who's in a position to provide help, who's got strong governments, who's again in the position to find help. Now, Italy is in a terrible state. They delayed far too long after the corona began to spread in Italy before they took action. The result is that it spread across the entire country. Hotspot, I believe, is still Lombardy, but it's now all over Italy. Because just to give an example, when they started to place restrictions in Lombardy, they didn't act to prevent movement from Lombardy. And so people went from Lombardy back to southern Italy, to Sicily, to wherever. And the result was that the whole thing has spread out of complete control. So there's been a disaster in Italy. And the other thing that has happened is that the Italian health system, which has a very high reputation, has been revealed as being a very fragile thing. It has got, it does not have the huge reserves and resources that certain countries like China and Russia have. Now, can I just explain something about this illness, which I think is simply not understood, and it is starting to concern me, because I'm seeing more and more people are talking about this very low death rate that it has. I've seen articles about this. I've seen a study by Professor Ioannidis at Stanford University, which has been put up on several websites and which was now yesterday sent to me by someone, which says, you know, this is minor cold. It's not a big deal. We're panicking over nothing. These very low death rates are the product of the fact that people who are contracting this disease up to now are getting care. If they weren't getting care, there would be a very, very much greater spike in death rates. I've just today received an email from a friend whose doctor friend has written to him in these terms. What she says, this is the doctor writes, "I am back in a North London hospital after a day away. It is catastrophic. We've run out of ventilators and we're having to palliate people in their 50s with no underlying health conditions. people who will certainly die on their own with no visitors. People are waiting to go into intensive care, into the intensive care unit in their 30s and 40s, who are likely to die waiting. Now, the point is, we hear all these reports about people in their 50s and less surviving this thing and not being under great risk. The reason is, you can put them, take up to now, we've been able to take them into hospitals, put them in under respirators, because they're quite young, they survive. Older people, people in their 70s and 80s, if you put them in a respirator, it's much more difficult for them. And of course, some of them, especially those who've got complications, die. I know that because it was my father, believe it or not, died under a respirator. He was in his 90s. He had all sorts of problems and he could develop a breathing difficulties, and he was put under a respirator. And that was how he died, because he was elderly. So for elderly people, respirators can cause enormous problems. For younger people, they generally don't. What is happening, and the real danger, is that health systems will no longer have enough respirators to treat people. The reason the death rate in Germany is lower than in countries like Britain and Italy and the United States is because Germany has many more respirators per head of the population than certain other Western countries have. And they also have, by the way, a higher number of hospital beds per person. What is happening is that as health systems start to break down, as they become overwhelmed by more and more cases, the death rate rises because there isn't enough facilities to treat people. That is what is happening in Italy. In Italy, the health system, which had relatively few respirators, relatively few hospital beds, because the Italian health system works on a not just-in-time system, has basically run out of resources. So it is having to turn to its friends, so-called friends. Now, what happens in big functional countries, countries like, let's talk about China. What the Chinese did when they realized that there was an epidemic raging in Wuhan and Hubei is they clamped down on Wuhan and Hubei. They imposed restrictions on movement. They have vast numbers of respirators right across China, and China actually makes them. And they mobilized all those resources and they swamped Wuhan and Hubei with health workers. Italy, which is a part of the European Union, looked to the European Union for that kind of help, and it didn't get it because two things have been exposed. First, the European Union states, individual states, don't have the kind of resources in terms of numbers of respirators that, say, China has. And quite apart from anything else, they don't feel that sort of solidarity, which involves mobilizing resources, sending them to the hotspots, treating the people there, getting them well, lowering the death rates, and containing the problem. So the result is that the death rate in Italy is now rising. It is, I believe, something like 8%. And if this situation gets worse and worse and worse, it will get worse still. We will see death rates above 10%, which there are some suggestions have already happened in some places in Iran. So that's what the crisis is. Now, the Italian government has given up hoping that it's going to get any help from the European Union, because the European Union is not providing it. So it's turned from its so-called friends to its so-called enemies, which are China and Russia. China and Russia operate very different types of health systems. They have vast numbers of hospital beds, far more per head of the population than we tend to do in the West. And they have large numbers of respirators. And because they haven't deindustrialized in the same way that we have, they also have the facilities to build them. So the Chinese have sent respirators to Italy. And now we see that the Russians are sending nine airplane loads, and the United States, the Ilyushin 76 is a huge transport plane. It can carry about 50 tons of equipment. It's sending 50 tons. You know, we've got 90, almost 400 tons of equipment being sent to Italy to help, and we can be sure there'll be things like respirators, or mobile testing kits. The Russians are big manufacturers of testing kits. Their first one, which was called Vector, was not very sensitive, but more recent ones that they've developed are more advanced and much more sensitive. And of course, they've got the resources to do that. And they've also got the technical people, the medical staff and the scientists who will go there. Now, this isn't, by the way, can I just say this also? I mean, it's in the Russians' interest to get a sense of what the crisis in Italy is like, just in case they have to take measures of their own in their own country of a similar kind. So the more cases you can look at also, the more samples you can develop, you can obtain, the easier it becomes to develop vaccines. And I understand that some of the experts that are being sent are specialists in vaccines, even though they're military people. So this is what is happening. Italy's been abandoned by its friends, the leader of the European Union. Angela Merkel is quarantined, and the entire system is broken. And what we have is a gigantic, burgeoning health crisis across the European Union. No European state is prepared. I just read what is happening in Britain. We've seen what's happening in Germany. We've seen what's happening in Italy. And the only two countries that seem to be functioning, the two big countries that are functioning effectively in this crisis, are China and Russia. There's also apparently been successful containment measures in South Korea, Taiwan, and a couple of other places. But the European Union has failed, and failed completely.
So this is so Russia kind of comes out ahead in three ways. And this is the same Russia that the European Union, by the way, is sanctioning.
Exactly.
They have been sanctioning Russia for the better part of 6 years.
Yes.
So it's obviously a humanitarian plus, a humanitarian win, if you can call it that. I mean, they are saving lives, which is great. That's the most important part. It's a PR and optics, media optics win. I mean, it looks good.
Yep.
For the Russian state.
Yes.
And it's a way for the Russian government to gather intel just in case something goes wrong. So they're on the ground and they're actually seeing what's happening in pretty much the hardest hit ground zero country at the moment.
Correct. So all three.
Yeah. So it's all three. The same country that the European Union has been sanctioning.
Yes.
This is the European Union that just 3 or 4 weeks ago was actually considering 3 million refugees via Turkey coming into the European Union if it wasn't for Greece closing down that border. This is the same European Union.
Yes.
Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said that he's going to be closing down Greece come Monday, 6 a.m. It's going to be a complete lockdown. He says, we are at war. That's what he told the Greek people. I agree with that. We are at war. Okay, the enemy is invisible. It's this corona disease. But Alexander, the real war that's going on here and has been going on for many, many years is against globalism. It's against this ideology, this neoliberal ideology. It's against these open borders. The European Union, for the better part of 10 years, has been making member states suffer, whether it's austerity, whether it's negative interest rates, whether it's robbing the banks, whether it's increasing the suicide rates of people. And now this, how much more do people need to suffer at the hands of the kleptocrats and the oligarchs in Brussels. How much more do we need to suffer? Will Italy wake up when this is all over and say, we've had enough of this? The European Union, in my opinion, the people in Brussels are responsible for what is happening right now in Europe. And this time, we're seeing a lot of people die. And I saw it in Greece with the austerity. A lot of people committed suicide. I saw it in Cyprus. Yes. All we are getting from the European Union is just misery, poverty, and death and disease. It is an absolutely dysfunctional organization and institution.
Absolutely right. Now, can I just say something? I mean, I don't speak Italian, but I do know people who do. And I gather they've been reading the Italian media, much of which has been the Europhile until now in Italian media. And in talking about the European Union and their EU allies, I gather they have been scathing, with more and more people saying, well, you know, we contribute to the EU budget. We have been following loyally all the policies the EU has been imposing on us. We've carried out all kinds of austerities. We vote for sanctions against Russia, which we don't believe in, because I should say Italy is one of the least anti-Russian. I mean, Russophobia has never really caught fire in Italy any more than it has in Greece. I mean, the Italians are huge skeptics about the whole subject of this conflict with Russia and, I mean, Ukraine and all that. They've never really taken it very seriously. They don't like sanctions. Many Italian businesses, to my knowledge, are very hard hit by the sanctions, and especially by the counter sanctions, which the Russians in retaliation imposed on the EU. So there's been all of this, and they're saying, look, we've made all these sacrifices. We've accepted 20 years of economic stagnation. And now in this existential moment, when, you know, thousands of people in Italy are dying, where are our partners? Where are our friends? And I gather at a time when Euroscepticism, to use the British expression, in other words, anti-EU sentiment, has been already gaining strength in Italy. We saw that with Salvini's rise and the rise of parties, even now, but more anti-skeptic than he is. With the rise of those parties and with the rise of that mood, we see how already the mood in Italy before this crisis has shifted. Now, Italian people, seeing all of this, seeing the way they've been abandoned, seeing the way the European Union can't help them, seeing the way other EU states can't help them, are asking themselves, why are we continuing to accept all these sacrifices, pay so much into the EU budget, do all of these things, when at the end of the day, they're not prepared to help us, even in the smallest way? I at the moment, we're getting talk about, you know, the European Central Bank now buying Italian sovereign debt. This is after Christine Lagarde gave a disastrous interview in which she said that the European Central Bank wouldn't do that. But how does that help people now? How does that help people at this particular point now, when what Italy needs is respirators and medics and medical support? It needs to have the kind of resources thrown at it that the Chinese threw at Hubei province. It's not coming from the EU. It can't come from the EU. And I predict that when this thing does burn itself out, which it will, I mean, in time, all infectious diseases of this sort burn themselves out. When it burns itself out, there will be a major hardening of the mood in Italy.
Are we going to go back, when this thing does burn itself out, are we going to go back to the open borders, neoliberal ideology, globalist ideology of the EU, Alexander, the same ideology that is hell-bent on destroying every member state's identity, culture, history, religion, values? This is the ideology. This is the ideology that has brought this upon us. Well, and my second question, and my second question to finish out the video, Alexander, Merkel in hiding. Why the hell doesn't she just resign? Leave.
Well, I completely agree. I mean, if it turns out that she's infected, I don't think there's any question at all. She should immediately resign. I mean, the very last thing Germany needs at the moment is a chancellor who's unable to function because she's ill with this potentially, as we've seen, fatal disease. So, I mean, you know, it seems extraordinary that she's still there. But let's just put Merkel aside just for this moment. Will they return to it? Well, there are some people who are fanatical enough and ideological enough in the EU to insist on it. And of course, the EU at the center will insist on it, because ultimately, what is the point of the EU if it doesn't have these open borders, at least the EU as it is structured now? What role does the European Court of Justice have? How can it enforce a single market across the entire EU if there is no free movement? Because the whole point of the single market is that there is a complete level playing field across the entire EU, the entire economic area. And that requires people to be able to move around freely. So they will want to keep the single market, because, you know, the whole point of the European Court of Justice is that it administers the European single economic area. That's what it's all about. Same about the Commission. How can they impose regulations and directives across the entire EU territory if there is no free movement, if states are withdrawing into themselves and are becoming, you know, self-sufficient or self, you know, closing borders again? I mean, from the Commission's point of view, that is absolutely unacceptable. So they will fight it. And they will also find people within the governments of certain states. And, you know, Merkel and Macron are the two obvious, outriders, who will also fight it too, because they believe, or in this project, or in Merkel's case, they personally benefit from this project. Because, to be very clear, Merkel has positioned Germany as the linchpin in the EU. It derives economic benefits from the EU, and it's put Merkel in pole position, or has put Merkel in pole position as the Queen of Europe. So they will fight it. They will try to return at the end of the day to this open borders policy. But I think there will be an awful lot more resistance in future. There's already growing resistance, and I predict there will be more. And I saw there was a very, very interesting headline, or rather story, in the British media. I can't confirm this, but it seems that none other than Macron told Boris Johnson that unless Boris Johnson took further steps in Britain to control the infection there, and we've discussed how weak the British government's response has been, France would close its borders to Britain.
I can confirm that.
Yeah.
I can confirm that in all that it's hit the whole news cycle here.
Right. Well, there you go. Yeah. So it's important to say, of course, Britain is outside the EU. But bear in mind, so many people in the EU had fought to keep the borders with Britain open. It was some people in Britain who wanted to put back control, British control of the borders. And now we see Macron, the great apostle of free movement, he's now imposing, he's now threatening the British with closing the borders with Britain. Even if Macron tries to go back, which I'm sure I predict he will, to the world before this infection struck, it's going to be very, very difficult to do. And he's already had to take steps to close the borders of France with one of its key partner states, which is Britain. So I doubt they'll be able to go back. I think that this has caused such an effect that I doubt that we will see a return to the status quo.
Queen Merkel in quarantine. Alexander, we don't get any daily press briefings, nothing out of the leadership in EU. There's no communication with the Europeans whatsoever. It's just a complete lack of leadership. But what about the external borders? That's a question I wanted to ask you. Okay, you're talking about the Schengen area, free movement within the member states. But the EU also has this policy amongst the external borders of just everyone come in. Are they going to finally reform there, that policy on the external borders? We need to remind ourselves, I think it was only last week that the EU actually decided to close down those external borders. Last week.
So now, I think one should say it's immigration policy has been a mess. I mean, I have never been able to understand it. In practice, it's attracting people to the EU, but it puts the burden on peripheral states like Greece. So its policies have been a total mess on this, but I gather that finally, as you rightly say, they are putting these limits on their borders. Will they return to the status quo ante? Will they try to go back to what it was before, to the mess that it was before, this indecipherable mess? Again, I think there's going to be lots and lots of people in Greece, in Poland, in Hungary, in Slovakia, in Italy also, I predict, who will say absolutely not. In no way are we going back to what existed before, because it's impossible for us to do that. I mean, it's been such a total failure. So again, you will see the ideological block at the centre in the Commission and in the European Council and the Secretariat, and you will see certain governments trying to promote these policies. But I predict they will come under enormous resistance. And of course, the psychological effect of what you said in the programme in Italy, of people seeing the help coming from China and Russia, especially from Russia, where Italy's had good relations with Russia, is going to be profound.
I just can't help to think, and I'm almost certain that if the EU had closed the external borders way back when the first case started to show, we would not be in this position.
Well, let's look.
The first thing they should have done is close all those external borders.
Well, let's look at one country that did. I mean, it didn't completely close all its borders, but Russia in January. What happened was the Chinese announced on the 20th of January, they informed the world that they have this major problem in Hubei, and they're taking all these radical measures, and that the disease can spread within human populations. It doesn't depend on animal transmission. It can go from human to human transmission. And the following day, the Russians, and many people were stunned by this. I mean, I didn't believe it when I first saw it. They closed the borders with China. Russia and China are these great friends, and the Russians acted immediately to close the borders to Chinese travelers, including Chinese tourists, only certain people on business trips and business visas, and obviously political and diplomatic people were allowed to go through, and apparently only after stringent tests. The result? Russia has 360 cases as I speak. Europe, tens of thousands. I believe Russia has had one mortality. An elderly professor who was seriously ill with many other complications. Well, in Italy, 800 people are dying a day. So I am not saying, by the way, that this will always remain like that in Russia. I mean, because now, of course, they're surrounded with countries that are infected. And of course, they're also having to bring back their own people from countries, you know, tourists and travelers and business people from all over the world, Russians who have been in infected countries. And they, you know, they have to self-quarantine, they have to quarantine for 14 days. But there's always a danger that some leaking will go on. So at the moment, they're on top of the situation, and the numbers are the rate of increase is fairly steady. It's about 50-60, which suggests it's containable, but it might explode there. But they have bought themselves time. They much more, when it strikes, they will be much better prepared than the European Union has been and than any Western country has been. And the point is, by contrast, the European states were asleep at the wheel. Boris Johnson was celebrating his election win and did very little else. Merkel was asleep at the wheel. The Italian political elite were busy putting together criminal charges against their most popular politician, Matteo Salvini, who was talking about placing restrictions on Italy's borders.
Well, why were they looking to prosecute Salvini?
Well, there you go. I mean, because he was looking to put restrictions on Italy's borders. I mean, you know, crazy. And I mean, one wonders how that prosecution could go ahead now. And of course, Monsieur Macron in France was coming up with his various projects and schemes and ideas, and was trying to involve himself, as I well remember, in the Russian-Turkish quarrel over Idlib province. So, I mean, all of these people were completely oblivious to what was coming. I mean, they didn't look at it, they didn't think about it, they didn't prepare for it. They clung on to the free movement provisions. They didn't take any steps to close their borders. And when it struck them, their health systems proved completely inadequate and they didn't know what to do. And Boris Johnson, who was, of course, outside the European Union, he had this very strange herd immunity policy, which means that the infection has now spread across Britain and was allowed to do so for weeks and weeks, entirely unchecked.
All right, Alexander, we'll leave it there. Everyone knows how to support us and to subscribe. I don't really have much else to say. I think the situation, I saw a video out of, I believe it was ITV in the UK.
Yeah.
ITV, is that correct?
Absolutely, ITV.
ITV, and they had the hospitals in Italy. And I mean, it was just horrible. And there's a lot of people that continue to say this is just a cold. And this is, I mean, 800 people a day are dying. It's awful.
Yes, I think that there is. Look, I come back to what I've said. I've said it on several programs. Now I'm going to say it again. When I first heard about this disease and people were talking about the incidence, I too said to myself at the time, well, you know, this looks like another serious flu, and, you know, we will get through, and, you know, perhaps the Chinese are overreacting. I think that was a view you could take in January when I took it. But as the information changes, you have to revise your views. And I think people who are refusing to do that are falling behind the curve, is all I can say. And in some cases, I understand, I mean, there are people, especially young people, I understand, who are still partying in the face of all this. It is reckless. As I said, if health systems break down, and in Britain, I read that message, they are coming dangerously close to breakdown. And we're only at the start of the epidemic here. In Italy, they have, to all intents and purposes, completely broken down. That is why they're having to turn to countries like China and Russia for help. Then the death rate will rise, which is what it is doing in Italy. And what is also probably true in Iran, though the figures from Iran are very difficult to understand, because Iran is so isolated now. But there we are. These countries are in. This is a very serious problem, and I think that it is unwise and foolish, actually, to go on disputing that fact.
Yeah, I believe Serbia is also getting help from China and from Russia, believe from various people that have been sending me messages that Sweden decided to also follow the UK's herd immunity policy, and starting to ramp up as well.
Well, why does that not surprise me? Of course, the other thing I'm going to say, and I will just add this, of course, the Chinese, by the way, are absolutely furious about all of this with some cause, because they're saying, you know, we did all these enormous steps in China itself to try to give everybody time. Everybody did the opposite of what they should do. So now it's spread all over the world. And now we're being reinfected from outside. And that is indeed what's happening. I mean, it risks this thing, this attitude, this passive attitude, first and foremost in Europe, but also to a great extent, let's be frank about this, in the US, has meant that this crisis, which could have been contained, is now out of control. And it could spread back even into countries like China, which, solved it. And Russia, which has managed so far to keep it at bay.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do a video on the US and China. And I mean, it was there in front of us for two, three months.
It was there in front of us.
China, obviously, China was not as forthcoming, in my opinion, as they should have been. But
no.
you know, every state should have, you know, erred on the side of caution.
Absolutely. By January, by mid-January, all the information was there. And in fairness to the Chinese, whatever they did before, and I'm the first person to say that the first 2 months, the Chinese completely mismanaged it. Maybe they did even worse. Maybe they tried to conceal it, which would be reprehensible. But after the 20th of January, everybody had all the information they needed to know what to do. The Russians, perhaps because they're close to China, perhaps because they were talking to the Chinese, acted. The Europeans didn't, and they're
perhaps
paying
they
a terrible
leadership.
Price. Well, they also have leadership. But as well, they do have leadership. I mean, we've talked about this. But I mean, they acted. The Europeans didn't. And the Europeans are now paying a terrible price. And the result is that the whole of the world is once more at risk.
All right. We'll leave it there, right?
We'll leave it there.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care.